Won't you let me walk you home from school? Won't you let me meet you at the maybe Friday I can get tickets for the dance. Now take you. Ooh. Won't you tell your dad, get off my back? Tell him what we said about painted black. Rock and roll is here to stay. Come inside, well, it's okay. Now shake you.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Put It In Your Pocket, your source for all niche music trivia. My name's Caroline, and today we're doing a little fall closeout roundtable. We're saying goodbye to November. By the time you're hearing this and this is airing, it will be officially December, which is crazy. It's just so crazy that this year has gone by so fast. But I really wanted to do some odes and some nods to some songs that every time I hear them, they take me back to this season. I feel like anything with an acoustic guitar, maybe a little bit of a vintage vibe, and a crooning voice brings me back to like, yes, this is September in song form. And I'm interested to see if you guys agree with me whether or not these songs give fall vibes or not. But the track that you just heard is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's called 13 by Big Star. And fun fact, when I heard that song for the first time, I was 13 and it felt like fate. But I love that song so much because I was in a really, really big 70s phase for the most part when I was discovering music on my own for the first time. And so I was just obsessed with anything acoustic 70s. And that was one of the first songs that I heard that wasn't played on the radio, and, you know, my parents and my grandparents didn't really know it, and I was like, yes, I'm finding my music niche, and I'm finding my, you know, own sense of style and taste, and so every time I hear that song, it brings me back to that. But it's just a beautiful little ballad. It's short and sweet, and it's definitely one of Big Star's, you know, greatest accomplishments for sure. Just a little tidbit about that song, Rolling Stone listed it as number 396 on their list of the 500 greatest songs of all time, and said that it's one of rock's most beautiful celebrations of adolescence, which I would have to agree. Beautiful song, and definitely gives me some fall vibes, so I wanted to start with that one for sure. But getting into the main big idea of this episode, we're going to be easing into fall with a song called Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying by LaBeeCiffrey. Yes, we're going back to LaBeeCiffrey. I was really sad we didn't get to play this song on the LaBeeCiffrey episode. It is one of his best. It's beautiful. A lot of people say it's his greatest song of all time. I still think that's my song, Argue With The Wall, but this is definitely just a powerhouse song. It's so beautiful, and in true LaBee Siffre fashion, it is deeply intimate and beautiful, and just, oh, it's so incredibly human. I love this song so much, and it's just, it's a very LaBee Siffre song and a very fall song, in my opinion. But the main, like, idea that I kind of want to talk about with this song is that it's a huge feature of a movie called The Holdovers. If you have not seen The Holdovers, pause this right now and go watch it. One, it's a Christmas movie, so perfect for, you know, the 1st of December, which I think this will air on. But two, it is just such a beautiful, beautiful movie. I mean, it won a bunch of awards. People loved it when it came out. It did great, you know, all that stuff. But this is a Caroline heartfelt, from me to you, it is one of the best movies I've ever seen. Please go and watch it. And anybody would like it. It's a movie for anybody. So, oh, beautiful movie. But fun fact, the director of that movie, Alexander Payne, said that he had never come across LaBee Siffre before until his music editor, Richard Ford, introduced him to his music. In a Rolling Stone interview that he gave about this song being in the movie, because this song kind of had like a moment after this movie came out. It wasn't super huge, but people were talking about it for the first time. And he said, I went, who is this guy and why have I never heard of him? I wound up listening to 15 or 20 of his songs. I went on a full LaBee binge, which, oh yeah, he'll do that to you. but I think that's so cool that he had never heard of him before. And LaBee Siffre is the perfect person to include in this movie. Like I said, this movie is incredibly human and very intimate, just like this song is. And I think that it's just like the perfect inclusion. But LaBee Siffre then gave his piece to Rolling Stone. This is a really cool article. You guys should check it out. But LaBee Siffre gave his little piece on, you know, if people in the next generation are finding his music. He advised that those who had found him by way of The Holdovers won't necessarily hear the same artist that they heard back then. He said, I'm quite happy for people to live in my past as long as they don't expect to find me there, because they won't. Such a LaBee Siffre quote, holy crap. But I think that's so cool that he's saying, you know what, I'm glad you like my music, but that's not the type of stuff that I'm doing anymore. I think that's a very, you know, mature take and very true for most artists, because that song came out 50 years ago. I mean, it's not going to be the same artist. But this song specifically, talking about it apart from The Holdovers, Last Chance, please go watch that movie. I'm begging you. Perfect for the Christmas season. Have some tissues next to you is all I'm going to say. But this song, Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying, is the title track of LaBee's third album, released in 1972. It includes Bless the Telephone, My Song, both things that we heard on the LaBee Siffre episode. Definitely his most popular album. And it was released as a single in the US, but it didn't really chart because it's a very niche indie LaBee Siffre song. It's not going to be super commercially successful. But Olivia Newton-John covered it on her 1975 album. Whitney covered it on their 2020 album. That's the band Whitney, not Whitney Houston. And Peach Pit covered it, which is my favorite cover of that song, on their 2025 expansion version of their album Magpie, which actually just came out. So go check that out. But yeah, there's some little quick facts about that song. I just think it's so beautiful. And even though it does make me think of The Holdovers now, which is a winter Christmas movie, it's very New England winter. I need to stop talking about this movie. Please go watch it. Please, please go watch it. But this song just reminds me of fall, like easing into fall, like August going into September, because it's so soft and so beautiful. And at the end, lyrically, we kind of see an admittance of him lying in some of the earlier lines, trying to like cover himself up a little bit. And at the end, he's just fully revealed what he's really saying and what his heart is really feeling. You'll see what I'm talking about when you hear it. But here's one of my favorite slip into fall songs. We're gonna ease in with some LaBee Siffre. I'm so glad that he's back. Here's Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying.
Crying, crying never did nobody no good, no how. That's why I don't cry. That's why I don't cry. Laughing, sometimes does somebody some good somehow. That's why I'm laughing now. That's why I'm laughing now. Loving, loving never did me no good, no how. That's why I can't love you now. That's why I can't love you now. Lying never did nobody no good, no how, no how. So why am I lying now? So why am I lying now? So why am I?
It's always such a treat when I get to hear that song again. And anytime I get to hear Labee Siffre's voice again, I love when he pops up. Maybe he'll weasel his way in at some later point in the show. But yeah, that was Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying. Oh, just another example of how genius he is. I love his music and I love that song. But if you're worried, I know specifically talking to my mom, if you're worried that the rest of the show is just going to be acoustic ballads, it's going to get better, okay? We're jumping to the 1990s for some Radiohead, which, yes, the Radiohead episode is coming. They just have so much stuff to whittle through that it's taken me like a whole, like, Hobbit-type journey of discovering their discography to try and give them justice. But we will do Radiohead at some point, probably when I'm, like, super depressed in January and we can, like, fully channel the Thom Yorke blues. But for now, we're just sticking with one of their biggest hits. This is a song called High and Dry, which I'm sure a lot of you will probably recognize. And it was released on their second album, The Bends, in 1995. This song is so fall to me. I don't know why, so fall to me. And I thought this would be a good little bright point to get us a little bit more hype. Again, of course, this is a Radiohead song, so it's still very sad, but a little more upbeat sonically. So High and Dry was recorded as a demo during the sessions for their first album, Pablo Honey. Yes, that is the album with Creep on it, stop asking. And in 1993, that album came out, but it was remastered for The Bends and credited on that album. It's also credited as an influence for the early discography of Coldplay. I kind of fell down a rabbit hole when doing research for this song. Apparently Coldplay has cited this song specifically as one of their influences 100 times. They talk about this a lot in interviews, and the Irish Times even published an article about them when they became super popular for the first time, saying that without High and Dry, Coldplay would never have existed, and that the song essentially invented them. So that's super interesting, and at first I was like, I don't know about that, but I definitely can hear the influence there. So that's something to put in your pocket. Very interesting little tidbit there. But Radiohead's lead songwriter, Thom Yorke, even before he demoed this song for Pablo Honey, performed an early version of this song with another band called the Headless Chickens while attending the University of Exeter in the late 1980s. He said that the lyrics were about, quote, some weird girl I was going out with, but it became mixed up with ideas about success and failure. This is definitely a motif in a lot of Radiohead songs, and why I love Thom Yorke's songwriting so much. I feel like a lot of his songs will begin more nailed down to one specific topic and more specific, And then it'll kind of do a reverse funnel where by the end you're like, this could be about anything. I don't really know what he's saying anymore. And I love that. That's super masterful. I feel like that's the opposite of what Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying did, where it starts out kind of broad and then by the end you're more narrowed down into a specific idea. This song is doing the indirect of that. So I think that's super interesting. And then in 1993, when Pablo Honey came out, they recorded a demo at Courtyard Studios with their live engineer, Jim Warren. And he said that it was way, quote, too Rod Stewart for them to publish, which is really funny. But the demo was rediscovered and remastered for the Bends. And in 2006, Tom York said that High and Dry was super bad and that their record label at the time had pressured them into releasing it. And without that pressure, they never would have let it see the light of day. I do agree, it's not one of their best songs. It is a lot more commercial than a lot of their other stuff, but it's still a great song and we love it. So I think that's super funny. Always like discovering what artists like and what they don't like in their own discography. And the last little fact I had about this song is that there's two music videos for it. The one that I always think of is the one for the American market, that their record label Capitol commissioned for them, where they're in like a roadside diner doing some Pulp Fiction type stuff. And after MTV said that they didn't want to play it, the video was edited to remove a shot of an exploding car, which is super weird. I feel like MTV aired some way crazier stuff than that. But the first music video is just them at the Vasquez Rocks outside LA singing the song. So nothing too crazy there. But yeah, High and Dry, classic middle of fall for me. Definitely like reminds me of coming home from practice and having to get all my homework done. The sun is setting at 4:30 in the afternoon because the daylight saving sucks. All of those super fun memories. But I love the song so much. I understand Tom York. I understand the hatred, but I'm not going to support it. We love this song and we love Radiohead. They will be popping up very soon, so don't get too sick of them just yet. Here's High and Dry.
Don't leave me high.
That song is so classic. I feel like that's such a recognizable first guitar at the very beginning. You're like, yes, immediately turn it up. I know what this is. Oh, I love that song so much. And it just takes me back. Now I'm excited for a Radiohead episode. Move out of the way, everybody else. But anyway, what we're moving to now, we're going back to an old friend as well. We're saying hi to Taylor Swift again. Taylor Swift, for a while there, when she was releasing her albums Folklore and Evermore, was like the queen of August/September sadness. And every fall, I put on Folklore and Evermore again, and it takes me back. I love those albums so much. They're definitely my favorite of hers. And it would not be a true fall episode if I didn't include her song August from her 8th studio album Folklore. It came out in 2020 and immediately became one of her most recognizable songs. It is a super popular song of hers, but I feel like a lot of mainstream just pop music lovers might not know it, if that makes sense, but anyone who's like a slight fan of hers definitely knows it. Her producer, Jack Antonoff, who's helped her with a bunch of projects, co-wrote the song with her, and then they produced it with her current boyfriend, Joe Alwyn, who had a lot to do with Folklore. It's partially why I miss him. I won't get into that. But this like narrative of August, this song is super interesting because it's about a fictional love triangle. So I'm trying not to get too deep into the weird Taylor Swift lore, but Folklore and Evermore are both fictional albums. So they're about characters and places. It's kind of like reading a novel auditorily, if that's a word. But there's a love triangle between three people, Betty, James, and an unnamed girl who is the narrator of this song. They never got a name. I guess she's just not that important, which is very sad for her. But she did get a great song, so I'll give her that. But anyway, the entire album of Folklore and a little bit of Evermore is about this love triangle that Taylor Swift kind of just came up with herself, which makes it a super lyrically interesting album. And a lot of fans, before they knew this, were like, who are all these weird relationships she's singing about, like what's going on? And it was all fictional characters, which is really funny. But Jack Antonoff produced the instrumental for this song first, which is super interesting, and then sent it to Taylor, who wrote the lyrics on the spot, like intuitively, because of course she did. That's what you do when you're Taylor Swift and you're so talented. But the track itself peaked at number 46 on the Billboard Global 200 and in the top 40 in Australia, Canada, Ireland, Malaysia, Singapore, and the US. Woo! Okay. that's a lot. But basically, kind of popular everywhere. The other single off of Folklore, Cardigan, definitely charted better. And that's also a great fall song, but this one's called August. I mean, hello. Like, we're getting there. She's telling us. So, the narrators of her songs, Cardigan and Betty, are explicitly named, but the narrator of August is not. And I kind of mentioned that earlier, but Vulture Magazine's Nate Jones said that this was on purpose and that it was a highlight of her, quote, relative unimportance in her lover's life, which is super interesting. And I love that theory. Definitely something Taylor Swift would do for sure. But Swift herself said that she did not determine a name for her, calling her Augusta or Augustine inside her head. And as like the summer romance in this song progresses, the narrator is kind of portrayed as like inexperienced and kind of meek a little bit, and that's where we get the line, canceled my plans just in case you'd call. So definitely about like first love, kind of like barely stepping into things a little bit, being up for anything. And I think that she just captures that emotion and that state of mind very, very well. That's something that Swift is very good at, putting herself in the shoes of kind of anybody and everybody in her music. Valerie Megan from Clash magazine said that the lyrics felt, quote, voyeuristic as we lean in to hear all the stories that innocent era Swift would have kept secret. Music journalist Jody Rosen in the LA Times appreciated the shift from, quote, pure first-person subjectivity to fictional narratives. She said that August is one of the album's highlights, and the song is the album's most plainly beautiful ballad. She also placed it as number 5 on the 2021 ranking of all 199 songs of Taylor Swift's discography. Since then, there have been many more songs, but at the time, only 199. I mean, come on, get to work. Ellen Johnson from Pace labeled the track as one of the best in her discography as well. In Vulture's list ranking of all songs in Taylor Swift's discography, Joan Edwards said that August is an example of how, even in fiction, Swift's ability to capture the wistful ache of nostalgia remains unmatched. So that's kind of a bunch of stuff I'm throwing at you there, but I wanted to really highlight just how important this song is in the 2020 chapter of songwriting. In 2020, we were getting a lot of like Lizzo pop coming out of the woodwork a little bit. We had a lot of Billie Eilish kind of turning more pop. We had a kind of movement away from deep, like, lyrical introspection, which makes sense because at that time we were dealing with a lot, clearly. And everybody expected Folklore and Evermore to be albums, even though they were surprise albums, still expect them to be, like, bubblegum pop like she had been doing. And they were just a complete turn away from that. And I think that's what makes them so interesting and exciting. I remember when that album came out, what a big deal it was, how shocked all the fans were that she made something like it. So, I don't know, it just always takes you back to that point in time, I guess. But this is just such a great song to kick off the season with, and as we're saying goodbye, I'm definitely gonna miss it until it's next August season. It's really funny, every single time August comes around again, this album starts, like, peaking up at the Billboard charts. It's really funny to watch. Every single year it happens without fail, and that is the power of Taylor Swift and naming her songs after months, which she does a lot. But I wanted to play this song as a farewell. Definitely gonna miss it being popular again until next fall, August. This is August by Taylor Swift.
Salt air and the rust on your door. I never needed anything more. Or whispers of "Are you sure?" Never have I ever before. But I can see us lost in the memory. August slipped away into a moment in time, 'cause it was never mine. And I can see us twisted in bed sheets, August slipped away like a bottle of wine, 'cause you were never mine. You're back beneath the sun, wishing I could write my name on it. Will you call when you're back at school? Lost in the memory, August slipped away into a moment in time, 'cause it was never mine. And I can see us twisted in bed sheets, August sipped away like a bottle of wine, 'cause you were never mine.
I'm hoping that the audio picked up right so that everybody could hear the beautiful horns and like string section at the end. That arrangement is so beautiful. Thank you, Jack Antonoff, for blessing our ears with that. But I love that song so much. Definitely a highlight of that album for sure. So now we've unfortunately reached the last song that I'm going to play you guys, but we're going way back again. We edged forward with Radiohead and Taylor Swift. We're going back to 1968 with a song called The Wait. Again, this is a song that I'm not going to be able to explain why it reminds me of fall so much, but it does every single time I hear it. And this is probably the most iconic song on this list by far. And that's why I wanted to end with it. It also has some really cool stories behind it. So this song was released as a single on the band's debut album, Music from Big Pink. It was their first release under that name. Before they were the band, they were the Canadian Squires and Levon and the Hawks. So those are some alternate universe versions, I guess. This song is listed as number 41 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time list in 2004. That version. And Pitchfork Media named it as the 13th best song of the 1960s, which is saying something. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame named it as one of the 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. PBS described it as, quote, a masterpiece of biblical allusions, enigmatic lines, and iconic characters. And it said that it is enduringly popular because it is an essential part of the American songbook, which I could not agree with more. This song is just best described as part of the American songbook. It is one of the best songs in rock and roll history. Every single time you hear it, there's someone singing along, whether you're in the car or you're outside and they're playing it at a restaurant or something like that. Oh, it's just so good. And it's just a classic for any situation. So I knew I wanted to cover this song sometime on the podcast history. And here we go. We've reached it. Who knew it would be for a fall roundtable, right? But getting into the meaning of this song, which is super fun because they've never really confirmed exactly what it's about. And I do kind of want to caution myself from getting too far into the true meaning because I just love making up stories about this song in my head. It's just so much fun. And it's a very cool narrative folktale, but the people who were behind the creation of it, songs like this usually take a team of people to assemble, they've kind of alluded to a lot of the reasons why certain names are mentioned or certain places are. So let's get into that for a little bit. Mostly, when people talk about this song lyrically, I feel like Nazareth being the main place that they keep going back to is definitely one of the reasons why people say it's such a biblical song. And that's always the part that caught my ear too. So it's really interesting to figure out that written by Robbie Robertson, this song was written by him, who found the tune of the, you know, instrumentals behind the lyrics by kind of just strumming on his guitar, which is a very classic thing for these very talented band members to do. Just strum along in your room for a little bit and create one of the biggest masterpieces in rock history. When he noticed that the interior of his guitar had a stamp noting that it was manufactured in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and started crafting the lyrics around that place. So that's super interesting. That's just a cool story. But the overall inspiration and influence for this song is the music of the American South, which was super big in the mid to late 60s. A lot of like Bob Dylan, early Bernie Taupin stuff was kind of being influenced by that. The Rolling Stones were getting into it as well. The life experiences of band members and movies of the filmmakers Ingmar Bergman and Louis Buñuel. They're like mentioned a lot in the band's discography. I find that super interesting as well. And oftentimes, music and movies go hand in hand, so that's some more like pop culture influence through there. But the characters in The Wait are based on real people that members of the band knew. According to Robbie Robertson, Fanny is based on Francis Steloff, the founder of a New York City bookstore, where he found a lot of scripts from Buñuel there, so that's super cool. And Helm explained in his autobiography that Carmen was from his hometown, Turkey Scratch, Arkansas. Yes, that is a real place. Young Anna Lee is mentioned in the third verse, and that was Helm's longtime friend Anna Lee Amsden. And according to her, Crazy Chester was an eccentric resident of Fayetteville, Arkansas, who carried a cap gun around all the time. So this is something that I feel like you would hear made up for a song, not the other way around. And Ronnie Hawkins would tell him all the time to keep the peace at his Rockwood Club when Chester arrived. So all of the band members are kind of intertwined and throwing in pieces from there growing up and life experiences. I think it's so cool that they used the city bookstore where he found scripts that inspired the song. Just like a really cool full circle moment there. So this song is as autobiographical as it is more of like a fable folklore piece. And it's been covered by Aretha Franklin, The Grateful Dead, Diana Ross, The Temptations, and Weezer to cap it all off. So this song is just so iconic. And again, I'm not going to explain why I think it's a fall song. It just is, okay? It just is because I say it is. Just come along with me. But I knew I wanted to talk about this one just because it's so interesting. And I hope when you hear it, it takes you back to whatever place and time it takes you back to. I know I'm going to be singing along the entire time that this is playing. Here is The Wait by The Band off of their very first album. Imagine writing this for your debut album. Okay, I'm done talking about it. Here it is.
That's okay, boy. Won't you feel?
I feel like we've had the most iconic guitar openings in this episode out of anything ever. acoustic guitar is just synonymous with fall. I'm learning so much about myself here. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. It was short, but sweet. And these are all kind of songs that have been floating around in my head that I've been wanting to play, but haven't really known how to connect. And I think I've found a good through line here. So goodbye, fall. One of the best seasons for musical inspiration. And now we're going to plunge into the depths of winter and explore maybe some more depressing sides like Radiohead. We might do like another vintage country episode to really hone in on the despair. We'll see how that goes. But thank you guys so much for listening. Let me know what you liked, what you'd like to hear next. And as always, this has been Put It In Your Pocket. My name is Caroline. Thank you for listening.